Hey, how's it going? Picking up on chapter 15. Sorry about the background noise, any other stuff yet. As I've said a million times, I'm not in anything that's soundproofed. Just reading this really cool Bible in the open here. And I got to be able to hear my daughter too. So blah, 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 blah. Chapter 15, that's where we're at. Just kind of hoping to be a little more regular about this, but life is so crazy right now. It's just crazy. Everything's just crazy. Every time you think you're going somewhere or something's changing, there's like two steps backwards. And like a step forward, like you lose the masks in some places, but in other places they're now, you know, more mandatory. Just some weird, weird stuff. I'm not buying any of it, just for the record. COVID is a virus of the mind, not a virus of the body. They eradicated the common cold and the influenza B, or, you know, your regular flu. They don't exist anymore, but the numbers of COVID infected aren't any higher than the total numbers of the common cold and the influenza used to be. They've just literally changed it. And then, you know, the PCR tests that aren't made for detecting anything. I mean, they'll tell you what's in your body. Everybody has HIV in their body. They gear those tests to show you that you know, to amplify it. And everyone in America or the world will have HIV. I mean, they can literally tell you have anything that's already in your body. They're just amplifying and showing you that it's there. It doesn't mean that it's infecting you or that you have a virus or that it's harming you in any way. If you knew half the things that were in your body, you would probably freak out. You carry tens of thousands of germs and bacteria and viruses in your body at all times that they're just dormant, you know? Not enough of them to do anything, just kind of part of the whole, you, part of your whole, you know? I mean, really, we're nothing, right? We're just energy, we're water, we're atoms, you know? Yeah, God made them extremely intelligent, right? They kind of fixed themselves. That's the one thing, man. This whole COVID thing, no one's talking about boosting your immune system. No one's talking about fasting to clear out your system if you do have a virus or something going on. If you think you're getting sick, fast, immediately. You know what I mean? Like, clear your body. Anyway, none of that matters. We're here to read the Bible. We're on chapter 15. There's my daughter in the background, having a good time. So chapter 15. Then Moses and the sons of Israel sang this song to Jehovah, and spoke, saying, I will sing to Jehovah, for he is highly exalted. He has thrown the horse and its rider into the sea. My strength and song is Jehovah, and he has become salvation to me. This is my God, and I will glorify him, the God of my father, and I will exalt him. Jehovah is a man of war. Jehovah is his name. Jehovah is a man of war. That's kind of cool to hear. There's this idea that Christians are like some kind of peace-loving, you know, Jesus was a hippie. I mean, the guy, we haven't gotten in this book, but I've heard a million times that Jesus was like up in a temple whipping people. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think he's as soft as they try to portray him to be. I think he was very, very firm, you know? He's kind of like an outlaw and his 12 bandits, you know what I mean? They went around and were changing things. And I'm sure the law at the time didn't consider them to be sons of gods or something noble, you know? They looked at him like terrorists, kind of like we look at people today, except our terrorists, like ISIS and all that, they're going around wiping out old world architecture and things like that, taking out evidence that we could potentially use to, you know, predate ourselves, to learn our history, things like that. Sorry about the spitting sound. I got a thing of zin in my mouth. Trying to quit the dipping thing. Okay. Jehovah is man of war. Jehovah is his name. He has thrown Pharaoh's chariots and his army into the sea, and the choice ones of his officers are drowned in the Red Sea. And the choice ones of his officers are drowned in the sea. The depths cover them. They have gone down into the depths like a stone. Your right hand, O Jehovah, is glorious in power. Your right hand, O Jehovah, dashes the enemy to pieces. And in the greatness of your majesty, you will pull down those who rise up against you. You send forth your wrath. Stubble. Ooh, okay, this word, I've never seen this word. It devpurs? This could be a typo. It's devpirs. Devpurs them like stubble. I don't know what that meant. I don't know. Devours them like stubble? That doesn't even make sense. I don't know what that is. Dev purse them like stubble. Well, I'll be looking up that word if that is a word. And by the spirit of your anger, waters were heaped up. The running water stood like a wall. Next page. The depths congealed in the heart of the sea. Congealed. Huh. The enemy said, I will pursue. I will overtake. I will divide the spoil. My soul shall be filled with them. I will draw my sword. My hand shall destroy them. That didn't work out. You blew your wind. The sea covered them. They sank like lead in mighty waters. Who was like you among the gods, O Jehovah? Who was like you? Glorified in holiness, fearful in praises, O worker of wonders. You stretched your right hand. The earth swallowed them. You led the people whom you had redeemed in your mercy. You guided your strength to your holy dwelling. You guided in your strength to your holy dwelling. That didn't sound right. Your holy dwelling. People heard. They trembled. Trembled sighs the inhabitants of Philistia.
Yeah.
Philistia. Philistia? Okay. Then the leaders of Edom were confounded. The leaders of Moab were seized by trembling. All the inhabitants of Canaan were melted. Terror and dread fell on them. By the greatness of your arm, they are silent as a stone until your people pass through. O Jehovah, until pass through the people whom you have brought. Your people pass through. O Jehovah, until pass through the people whom you have brought. That sentence sounds weird. You shall bring them in and plant them in the mountain of your inheritance, the place you have made for your dwelling place. For your dwelling place. O Jehovah, the sanctuary which your hands have prepared. O Lord, Jehovah reigns forever and ever. For the horses of Pharaoh went in with his chariots and his horsemen into the sea. And Jehovah brought back the waters of the sea on them. And the sons of Israel went on dry land in the midst of the sea. And the sisters of Aaron, Miriam, the prophetess, took the timbrel in her hand. Timbrel, what's that? And all the women went out after her with timbrels and with dances. Okay. It sounds like I want to say tambourine, but that doesn't even... Tangerine? One of the little things you shake. It's got the little bell things all around it. I mean, I don't know if that's what that is, but... That sounds crazy. Yeah. And Miriam answered to them, "Sing to Jehovah, for surely he has triumphed gloriously. He has thrown the horse and its rider into the sea." So yeah, I guess I'm... to me, it's like they have a tambourine. Is it tambourine? Tambourine? You say something too many times, you don't, like, use a word enough. You pull it out later, and you're like, wait a minute, is that a word? So I think it's tambourine, but it sounds like they were dancing and shaking things or making some kind of music to dance with. I don't know. I could be completely wrong. It could be a stick. I don't know what they're referring to there. And Moses made Israel to pull out from the Red Sea. And they went out into the wilderness of Shur. And they went into the wilderness 3 days and did not find water. And they came to Marah. And they were not able to drink water from Marah, for it was bitter. Therefore one called its name Marah. And the people murmured against Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" And he cried to Jehovah, and Jehovah showed him a tree. And he threw it into the water, and the water became sweet. He made... Huh. Makes you wonder if there's not a plant or something you can get if you're out in a wooded area or something like that, that you have bad water. Is there plants around you that can fix that? That's certainly not something I've ever heard in a hunting class. You gotta wonder, though. You gotta wonder. It's in here, right? They're talking about that. You had bitter water. They took a tree, put it in it, and the water became sweet? Like, fixed the water? Huh. And they came to Elim. Elim? Elim? E-L-I-M? Oh, wait. I missed something here. Oh, the water became sweet. Okay. He made a statue and an ordinance for them there. And he tested them there. And he said, "If you carefully listen to the voice of Jehovah your God, and you do what is right in his eyes, and you give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, you will not put on all the dresses..." God, I'm out of... You will... Sorry, the writing's so small. keep his statutes, I will not put on you all the dresses which I have put on Egypt, for I am Jehovah, your healer. And they came to Elim, and there and there were 12 springs of water and 70 palm trees. And they camped by the waters. Chapter 16. Yeah, I need to be reading this more. Like, even, it gets hard to read this because it's so small. There's actually, like, if you could read Hebrew or Greek, the text is so much bigger. It'd be so much easier to read. I just can't read Hebrew or Greek, so. We are trusting the translations that have been put forth here in English based off those. Chapter 16. And they pulled out from the Elim. And they pulled out from Elim. And all the congregation of the stone of Israel came into the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after their going out from the land of Egypt. And all the congregation of the sons of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron in the wilderness. And the sons of Israel said to them, Would that we had died by the hand of Jehovah in the land of Egypt, and are sitting by the flesh pots, and are eating bread to satisfaction. For you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill all this assembly with hunger. Every time something's not going right for these guys, they just freak out on Moses. This has got to be like the third or fourth time that they've been like, you're trying to kill us, Moses. You're just trying to kill us. I mean, the guy parted the sea, took you away from the Pharaoh so he could starve you in the forest. There's just no logic behind any of this. I have no idea what that noise was just behind me. Ah, that's my daughter doing something. Okay. She's just on the other side of the door. Silly monkey. Okay. Assembly with hunger. And Jehovah said to Moses, behold, I am bread. Oh, behold, I am. Bread will rain from the heavens for you. And the people shall go out and gather the matter of a day in its day. What? And the people shall go out and gather the matter of a day in its day, so that I may test them. So, gather the matter of a day in its day. So, I mean, you're supposed to get a whole day's worth in a day? That doesn't even make sense. And the people shall go out and gather the matter of a day in its day, so that I may test them. Whether they will walk in my law or not. Okay. So he's giving them a day to get everything they need for that day. And that's as long as they're not distracted or building idols, right? Golden calves. He'll stay with them? Okay. And Moses and Aaron said to all the sons of Israel, at evening you shall know that Jehovah has brought you from the land of Egypt. And in the morning you shall see the glory of Jehovah. In his hearing, your murmurings against Jehovah. And we, what are we that you murmur against us? And we, what are we that you murmur against us? And Moses said, when Jehovah gives you flesh to eat in the evening and bread in the morning to satisfaction, when Jehovah hears your murmurings, which you are murmuring against him, you will see. And what are we? Your murmurings are not against us, but against Jehovah. You know, I think if I was following somebody on the side here, and this guy had already done everything he had done, to get me to where I was, I don't think that I would just, I mean, how codependent are these people? He gets them anywhere where they could just, you're away from Egypt, dude, you're in a forest, survive. And they're like, if you don't give us this stuff, we're gonna die. If you don't do it for us, we're gonna die. And that's just, that's so anti-independent, it doesn't make sense. I mean, he gave us our will and everything so we could be, and here this group is demanding that this one guy who can speak with God does everything for them. What? That's a group I would leave. Seriously. Yeah, I mean, I don't think I'd want to leave Moses, but the whole way I would have been like, dude. I don't know. They needed to be saved. Maybe. I guess I don't know. They'd gone through a lot. Maybe helplessness was, you know, what was in their nature at that time. Maybe they were victims. Maybe they all carried a victim mentality, and it wasn't something that they could just get away from. And maybe God knew that, and that's why he put up with so much of it. And when they did murmur, he gave them what they needed. I mean, it's weird to me. It just sounds so weird. The guy split the sea, and you're like, still, oh. That was nothing. That was a trick. We're in the woods now. You just brought us here to kill us. You know, make your god do more. Whoa. If I was God, I would have created a little hand out there to slap them all and tell them to just listen to Moses, follow him, and shut up. Good God. And Moses spoke to Aaron, "Say to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, come near before Jehovah, for he has heard your murmurings." And it happened, as Aaron was speaking to all the congregations of the sons of Israel, they turned toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of Jehovah appeared in the cloud. And Jehovah spoke to Moses, saying, "I have heard the murmurings of the sons of Israel. Speak to them, saying, between the evenings you shall eat flesh, and in the morning you shall be satisfied with bread. And you shall know that I am Jehovah, I am Jehovah your God. That whole eating flesh thing, I'm a vegan. Earlier in the book, it talked about, you know, the fruits, the plants and stuff were the food. And then, you know, he's with that hunter, and he decides, okay, you guys can eat this, but do you need it? Do you need to kill something to survive? I mean, I understand it tastes good, and you have fun hunting, but do you need it? Is it a need? Does that animal have to die? Do you need to go out and kill? I mean, could you have not just spent as much time farming and living a peaceful life and not terrorizing the animals in the forest around you? I mean, I don't know. If there was a lot of reports of leaving animals alone in the wilderness and they ran out of food, started coming out to where we were and attacking us, okay. But we don't see a lot of that. What we see is, you know, developers going into areas, destroying their habitat, and then they'll come out and kind of scour through. You know, you see a wolf or a coyote, or you hear about something in the neighborhood messing with garbage cans or something. But they're usually just tracking on their way to get something else. You don't hear about them just hanging out in the damn sewer, making a home, making a den in the middle of the city, and you have to get animal control to go into their den. That's stuff you see on the X-Files, not in reality, you know? Anyway, just because I'm vegan doesn't mean you have to be. It's neither here nor there. I just think it's odd that the book would give you that much information to tell you that this is good, and then you would go through a situation with God where he's like, well, this isn't great, but if it makes you happy and it does taste good, I'll allow it for this. But I mean, do you need to? I think need is something we need to consider a lot more. We want everything, but we don't need most of it. Anyway, and it happened in the evening. The quail came up and covered the camp. And in the morning, a layer of dew was around the camp. And the layer of dew went up, and behold, something small was on the face of the wilderness, scale-like, small like the hoarfrost on the earth. Small like the hoarfrost on the earth. So that's H-O-A-R, then a dash and frost. I'm not sure what that is. I'm not even sure if I'm saying that right. It's just, I don't like saying that word while reading the Bible. I don't know. I'm sure the Bible will refer to it maybe again later. I don't know. Like hoarfrost on the earth. I don't know what that is. Something else to look up. And the sons of Israel looked, and they said, each one to his brother. Is that a whatness? Is that a whatness? That is whatness. W-H-A-T-N-E-S-S. What is that? Is that a whatness? For they did not know what it was. So are you just asking, what is that? Is whatness, is that a whatness? Is that just a way of saying, what is that? Is that something that nobody knows? And Moses said to them, that is the bread which Jehovah has given to you for food. This is the thing which Jehovah commanded. Gather from it, each one according to the mouth of his eating. Oh, I'm not sure what this says. Each one according to the mouth of his eating. And Omer for a head? O-M-E-R? An Omer for a head, by the number of your souls, you shall take for each man who is in your tent. And so the sons of Israel did. And they gathered, the one gathering much and the one gathering little. And they measured with an Omer. Oh, like a scale. And the one gathering much did not have too much. And the one gathering little did not have any need. Each one gathered according to the mouth of his eating. And Moses said to them, do not let anyone leave from it until morning. So don't let anyone leave here until morning. Or from this area of food, I guess. And they did not listen to Moses. Of course they didn't. They never listen to Moses, do they? The guy's done all these things. And why would you listen to him? It's like the kid that you give everything to that just starts expecting and demanding it and never concerns himself with whether or not he needs any of what he wants. And they did not listen to Moses. Again. Some left from it until morning, and it became rotten with maggots and stunk. And Moses was angry against them, and they gathered it in the morning. Well, why should they worry? Every time they complain, Moses just gives them what they want. So he's like, oh, screw it. We'll walk away. It'll, you know, turn into maggots, and then we'll come back and we'll cry out to the Lord again. Oh, why have you brought us here to starve? And he'll give us more, because that's all that's happened so far. They whine and they get. They whine and they get. And I'm not saying anything against Jews here. I'm just saying this group is really ungrateful. Really ungrateful. That's what I'm taking from this journey they're on. And Moses was angry against them, and they gathered it in the morning, each one in the morning, according to the mouth of his eating. And it melted in the heat of the sun. And it came about on the sixth day, they gathered double bread, 2 omers for one. And all the leaders of the congregation came and reported to Moses. And he said to them, that is what Jehovah said. Tomorrow is a rest, a holy Sabbath to Jehovah. What you will bake, bake, and boil what you will boil, and lay up for yourselves all that is left over, to keep until the morning. Oh, dude, on the Sabbath, so you don't even cook on the Sabbath? I understand the Sabbath to be Saturday, but I try not to work. I won't even do work around my house. I'll try to just rest, you know what I mean, and not do that. But I'm not great at what I'm doing, and this is suggesting that you shouldn't even cook. So don't clean the house, don't cook, just don't do anything. Huh. And they laid it up until the morning, as Moses commanded. And it did not stink, and no maggot was in it. And Moses said, eat it today, for today is a Sabbath to Jehovah. Today you will not find it in the field. You shall gather it 6 days. Now on the seventh is a Sabbath. In it none shall be found. And it happened on the seventh day. Oh my God, it's almost like that's that day set up to fast. Huh. And it happened on the seventh day. Some of the people went out to gather and did not find any. And Jehovah said to Moses, until when do you refuse to keep my commandments and my laws? See, because Jehovah has given the Sabbath to you. Therefore, he is giving to you 2 days of bread on the sixth day. Each one of you remain in his place. Do not let anyone go out from his place on the seventh day. And the people rested on the seventh day. So they actually listened for once. And the house of Israel called its name Manna. I love that word, manna. I don't know. I think of it like when they refer to food, manna and mead. I always wanted to open like a vegan restaurant that was basically like flatbreads with different herbs, spices, and vegetables kind of baked into it that you would get with like some type of like a vegan gravy or cheese, something like, you know, real just like a savory gravy or cheese sauce that you would dip the bread in and all of it would be very healthy for you. I always, just kind of a thought in my head. Someone hearing this might steal that. Whatever. If you do it, I'll come. Open a manna. I'll be there. Make sure your gravy's good. It's going to be important for, you know, non-vegans. I can just eat the bread with the vegetables and seasonings or herbs in it, but we got some calorie stackers out there that may need that extra gravy and cheese to feel like they're satisfying their need or want, I should say. Okay, and the house of Israel called its name manna, and it was like the seed of coriander, white, and its taste like cakes with honey. And Moses said, This is the thing which Jehovah has commanded. Fill an omer from it, to keep for your generations, so that they may see the bread which I caused you to eat in the wilderness, as I brought you out from the land of Egypt. And Moses to Aaron, take a pitcher and put manna there, the fullness of an omer. Take a pitcher and put manna there, the fullness of an omer, and lay it up before Jehovah to keep for your generations. Even as Jehovah commanded Moses, Aaron laid it up before the testimony to keep it. I said that. That sounded right. Even as Jehovah commanded Moses, Aaron laid it up before the testimony to keep it. And the son of Israel ate the manna 40 years. They ate the manna 40 years. Is this self-replenishing? They only had an omer. until they're coming into an inhabited land. They ate the manna until they're coming to the border of the land of Canaan. And the Omer, it was the tenth of an epath. Wow, let's do that last paragraph again. And the sons of Israel ate the manna 40 years until they're coming into an inhabited land. They ate the manna until they're coming to the border of the land of Canaan. And the Omer, it was the tenth of an ephah? E-P-H-A-H? That doesn't make any sense to me. So the Omer and the Omer, it was the tenth of an epah. So an Omer, I guess this is like for scale, right? Whatever they're using to measure this Omer, its measurement is 1/10 of an ephah. Ephah? So God, is an ephah like a gallon and an Omer is like a cup? Like what's one? I don't know. I'm not a baker. I don't have measurements like that. Anyway, this is where we're gonna stop. We're on to chapter 17 when I pick up. This is moving extremely slow. I apologize. I'm just trying to slowly get back into it and keep the book going. I still haven't read ahead. I need to advance this a lot because I want to know what's in the Bible. I'm just not finding the time to sit down and do this. It's next to impossible. I mean, there's a million times I could sit down and just read it to myself with all the noises and distractions around me, but to actually record it and try and get it into an audio that is listenable is just incredibly hard. I was putting things through another app that would filter them, but it would lock that into my phone, and that would eat up my data or my memory on my phone, and when it got too full and I wanted to erase that, I found that by deleting those out of my phone, it was actually taking them off of Anchor too. So I'm now recording just directly onto Anchor with the hope that they won't get deleted. But it does take away the ability to eliminate a lot of background noise. I'll add some music to this or something to try and make that better, but I apologize. If this is just getting more painful. I will get better. I haven't really gotten into a rhythm yet, you know? I haven't found my tempo, so. But I'm way more motivated than I have been in a while. I think I went into depression. Might be why I haven't been around for a little bit here. I think everything just kind of hit me, and I lulled out for a little while and really focused on just what was going on at home, and now I'm ready to get back out and do something different. Now I need to change what I'm doing, so I'm going to be looking into doing a lot of different things in the next couple of months just to change my environment hard enough that I'm forced to deal with something different in a new thing, because where I'm at is I'm in a rut. I'm not going forward. I take steps backwards just to get back to where I am, but where I'm at isn't taking me where I need to be, so I need to get out of where I'm at. But anyway, I will continue this. This will go on, and like, anyone that turns this on in like 2022 or 23 will actually probably have enough episodes to carry through most of this Bible. But time's getting short. Getting shorter by the day. And it feels more and more like some type of climax is going to happen culturally worldwide in the next year or two. And I want to be done with this by then. To have my spiritual armor up and to have an understanding of what the book is saying and how it relates to what's going on around us. I find a lot of times when I'm reading in the Bible or just listening to other stories, especially Revelations, I can't wait to get to there, that I can actually draw parallels to things going on around us that are more than just descriptive. They're explanatory, and that's crazy. That's, you know, it puts a lot of credence into what the Bible is and what it's doing and what it says. I don't think this is just some book of metaphors. I think it's an accounting of history that has been tampered with heavily. And I think I've said it before, I'm in a post-trib. I guess that would be the label for me. I think the millennial reign already happened, and we are on the other side of that. I think in the 1850s, that's when Jesus left and they brought back all the souls. That's when we get all these orphan trains and, you know, the reset, which is something it seems like we're coming into now. Because if you think about it, the millennial rule was 1,000 years, right? It was Jesus rules for 1,000 years. And when he leaves, he was to let Satan take over for a little spell, for a little season, right? well, there's four seasons in a year, and if his ruling was 1,000 years and you were to break that into four seasons, you would think, okay, 250 years. So 250 years from 1800 or 1850 would put us right in that timeline, which means that whatever Satan's plan is for that little season is condensed now. Now, a lot of people are looking at, you know, the mark of the beast and all these things that they're waiting for to happen for Jesus to return that I believe happened. I believe those things already happened. And the fact that you're seeing parallels to that today, I don't think is something you should take and say, oh, this is because we are at this time period. This is just proof of that. I would say that in Satan's little season, when he gets to deceive the entire earth, he's going to make it look like, of course he's going to. He's going to make it look like you're in that timeline because he doesn't want you to know how close to the end you are. He doesn't, you know what I mean? It's this whole coronavirus and taking the shot. That could be the mark of the beast. That could absolutely be the mark of the beast. The DNA sequences that they're using, or the, you know, the mRNA that they're using, those are modifiers. It's basically turning a human into a GMO. And when you get into the patents and the actual laws underneath what's going on, you start to kind of get an idea of what they're doing. And they're turning basically humans into farmland. And what I mean by that is basically Monsanto created a genetically modified seed. Then they got a law passed that was essentially stating that, so you can't put a patent on anything natural. Something that grows out of the ground that's not, you can't put a patent on. But if it's modified, you can. So once they modify it, they get this patent on it. And it basically says that if that crop infects another crop and that, you know, this other farmer who's not in your program ends up with, you know, his crop turns to all GMO, well, now he has to pay you because there's a patent on that seed, and if you're growing it, you have to pay. It doesn't matter if you didn't plant it. If it's there and that's what's coming out, well, there's a patent on that seed and you're using it, regardless if you meant to or not. They're doing the same things with humans. They're going to change our DNA. Once your DNA is altered, they can patent you. People don't seem to understand this. Like, once your DNA, once you've taken that shot, you are now your DNA has been modified, so all those rights and protections that you think you have about my body, my choice, that doesn't exist anymore. You are now no longer a natural human. You have been modified, and you are absolutely underneath the laws and rules and you know, horror that comes with that. And that's why all these legislative things, the FDA won't back the vaccines. Now, that should scare you. Because through the 90s, early 2000s, 80s, anytime somebody came out with a supplement that wasn't FDA approved, they'd always say, well, if the FDA doesn't approve it, you shouldn't touch it. It's not safe. Well, now the FDA does not approve a vaccine or any of the vaccines that are being given to people. And people are like, so what? The TV says that I should do it, so I'm going to do it. Like, we are listening to our television over our common sense. It is alarming. But if you take that jab, if you take that shot, you are altering your DNA. It is a modifier for RNA. And you will be subject to patenting. You will be subject to modification going on. You will be the person that when they say you need another shot, that they can come hunt down and force the vaccine into. The people that never take it, you can't do that to them. Now, maybe it'll come to a point where they'll lock us up, or they'll try to put us somewhere, and they'll try and make life just incredibly hard. But what they can't do, according to the Bible, without our permission, is force that thing on you. So, and if they do, then glory be to God. You did what you were supposed to do. You were infected violently with something that you believe came from Satan, and you will espouse the name of Jesus all the way out. You scream at people, look what they did to me. Look what it did to me. You know what I mean? So I don't think that would stop you from getting into heaven if you're forced to take it. But willingly taking it, well, you're basically entering a contract. People don't understand. Everything's a contract. Everything is a contract. When you go to the DOL, the BMV, wherever you live, and you sign that paperwork and you get a driver's license, you have contracted to follow those laws with that state or that government. If you never do it, you're sovereign. to drive means that you are transporting, to be a driver means that you are transporting goods, or you know what I mean, you are literally, you're working. But if you're not driving, you're just traveling. You don't need a license to travel, period. You're not transporting commerce or goods or any of that, and that is the definition for a driver. So if you're just moving your persons and your personal things, then you're traveling from point A to point B, and you do not legally need a license. That's how all these sovereign people are doing it. If you don't understand what they're doing, that is the crux of it. That's what it really comes down to, right? That the moment you sign and accept that ID, you have signed a contract, and you are now obligated, or legally obligated, to honor it. And if you don't, there's consequences. I personally plan on letting my license expire as it sits, because for one, it's not going to expire until 2024, and there'll probably be some new ID by then anyway. But I don't want to carry on contracting with the state to travel, because I'm not working for the state. I'm not, you know, commuting commerce for them. So there's no reason for me to allow them to label me as a driver. I'm just out here to travel. I'm out here to do as God said I should do, which is spread out and multiply. So wandering should not be a problem. There should be no pass to wander, no ID to wander. I should be able to follow the sun around the earth and stay warm seasonally if I wanted to. I shouldn't need passports or any of that. I mean, I should be able to just live. And that's not what we're allowed to do. That's not godly, and that's why you gotta really look at what's going on and really think about your timelines. There's a very clear timeline of things to happen when Jesus came back, and we're not seeing it. We're kind of seeing an accumulation of everything. All of the things that happened are all kind of happening right now. So you could say, oh, there's the mark of the beast, or there's this, or there's, you know, an antichrist, could be this guy or this guy, you know. Or I'm more in the idea that we're waiting for Gog and Magog, and Gog is going to be science. I think Gog is science. It's already turned itself so far against what it's supposed to be, practically, that what we used to have, or where I think science started, was with, you know, practicalities. You would test and repeat something, and other people would do it, and you would all agree that that was the fact, that was the result, this is good. We don't have that anymore. What we have now is a bunch of people sitting around thinking about what could be, and then they call it a theory, and enough people say, hey, you know what, that sounds great, let's say that that's what it is, and they now, you know, just say that's your reality. A great example of that would be gravity. Gravity is a theory. It has never been proven. They've got black holes. They've had to come up with all kinds of crap to try and justify something that is simply explained by buoyancy and density. Covers it all. Covers it all. I was just watching a video about some Chinese scientist who was inventing the headline said an anti-gravity device, some kind of ring that was anti-gravity. But when you actually watch the video and you listen to what she was saying, it had nothing to do with gravitation. They were using extremely scientific terms, but what they weren't flat out saying is that this thing was generating a field that would alter density. It was a de-densifier. It could change the density, and apparently things above it, I think. I didn't really get the idea. It wasn't extremely clear about whether or not it was things just around it in a bubble or things that were placed just directly above it. They were getting a 2 to 11% decrease in density and making objects float. At one point, somebody was able to shoot an object away from the device, like a couple kilometers. I mean, it's crazy. It's super crazy. But when you look at her, and this woman's disappeared, by the way, they can't find her. The last they knew, she went back to China, allegedly. And China's kind of in the lead right now for these anti-gravity patents and things like that. Not to say that we're not too. And a lot of it just sounds like density to me. They figured out a way to, you know, create some type of device that can oscillate or do something that affects the density of things around it. And that's what anti-gravity is. It's density. Less dense floats, more dense sinks. When you can make the density of something lighter than the air, well, you can float it around. And if you can figure out the magnetics and the pull lines or whatnot to get your speed going, well, that makes a lot of sense too, right? Like those UAPs or UFOs we see in the sky are stopping on a dime and shooting. Well, if there's some type of magnetic, think of like, you know, the magnets, when you try to push them together when they're on opposites, they won't stick. I mean, think of running into something like that, and that stopping doesn't seem so jarring. It's actually coming into a field that's like a cushion, right? Anyway, I don't know if any of this is correct. I can tell you that it doesn't seem like we're dealing with any of the things that they're really claiming. Gravity, relativity, heliocentric, all these things that we've built a complete program called NASA around that has so much weight on the way we live and in our government's opinions. And everything they're doing is just completely fake. Completely fake. If we could go to space and there was space and we could land on the moon and do all that, believe me, there would have been, from the 90s on, from the beginning of the internet, from the beginning of live streaming, somebody would have put a damn camera on the moon and had it facing Earth. It would have been done. Would have been done. That's it. Probably would have had a flag of their country out in front of it so you could see it while your life, so the whole world could see that this country did it. You know? But we don't have that. Instead, what we have is scientists telling us that they use basically the technology of calculators to get there and do everything they did, play golf, drive dune buggies around up on that thing, and then came back and were, you know, 50, 60 years away from it with 10 times the technology, way better technology, and now we can't do it. It's too difficult. We don't have the technology to build that back. What? What? Please. Y'all didn't go to the moon. Ain't nobody ever been to that moon. That's an illuminary. It's a joke. You're not going to tell me that. You know what I mean? Just stop it. Just stop it. So, you get rid of going to the moon and space, then you can pretty much throw Earth as a round ball out the window too and get right back to what it was believed to be for centuries before this weird 500-600 year period we've been in where they've altered it. Weird. Well, at least we believe that's all. It could have just been altered since like 1800s, 1850, which I believe to be more likely, that history is so contorted and twisted and untrue, just dishonest about what it is, that we're leagues behind where we need to be to have any idea of what's going on or to know what to do. I mean, it really, the best answer that I can come up with is to just give your heart to God and to Jesus, and it's gonna get bad. It's gonna get bad. But like he said to those people we were just talking about in that chapter, don't go away from the gift he's giving you. Don't go away from it. Don't go away from God. Don't go away from Jesus. Stay. No matter what happens, stay. He will reward you. And on that note, I hope you all have a great, great week, a great day, and you find something to make you smile. Goodbye.